The sea slammed Anya's tailbone again, and another spray of salt water swept over her already drenched frame as the black Zodiac boat bottomed between two-story North Sea waves. The salt left her hair feeling as though she had soaked it with an entire can of some noxious hairspray. All she could think about was getting back to the hotel and taking a warm bubble bath. Tex, on the other hand, seemed to be almost enjoying himself. In the stern, another member of the B6 staff, called Lightning Rod, steered, looking particularly pirate-like with a black skull and crossbones head rag tied over his lengthy, wind-blown locks.
Why does everything always have to be so adventurous?
What'd I tell you earlier?
Ahead of them, the Gannet Sea drilling platform appeared slowly out of the gloom like a giant battle robot from some science fiction yarn. A few yellow lights were the most prominent of its visible features in the overcast early evening, and it was obvious to all aboard that even the slightest thickening of Scotland's ever-present fog would render it invisible. Abandoned in the early 90s by British Petroleum after it ran too dry to remain economically viable, the platform had become the haven and broadcasting station for Black Bart's bunch. The John O'Groats contingent were cramped into the black inflatable power craft, looking as serene as if bashing through sea were no more strenuous than a stroll in Hyde Park. In among the shadowed pillars that formed the legs of the station, they found a welded metal ladder awaiting them. With a theatrical gesture, Phil Dirt waved for Anya and Tex to begin the climb. Anya went first. The moment she put her hand on the first cold, slick rung, she was seized by a burst of self-pity. Luckily, it floated away almost as quickly as it appeared, as she reminded herself that a good deal of her free time was spent getting shot at. Things could always be worse. Tex followed close behind her.
Our friends are being pretty magnanimous, letting us go first.
Actually, I figured Phil did it so he could watch my butt.
Well, I'm sure that's among the fringe benefits. But by going first, if we slip and fall, we fall on them.
I feel so special.
Well, it's better than the alternative.
The main engineering room at the heart of Black Bart's broadcasting station was a boxy steel womb lined with racks and racks of equipment unfamiliar to Anya. The various tiny multicolored blinking lights and indicators provided all the illumination, except for a single amber blackout lamp that hung from the ceiling. The darkness simply added to the sense of claustrophobia that prevailed in the abandoned structure.
Right then, let's see what we've got.
Gannet Hundredmind rubbed together his fingerless gloved hands and swiveled on his stool, flipping switches all around him in a seemingly random progression. Anya and Tex stood behind him. Anya tried hard not to hover, but it was difficult in the limited space. Tex looked centered and relaxed in general, as if he was having a fine old time. Lightning Rod had stayed with the Zodiac boat when the others had entered the platform, apparently at a berth somewhere in the structure's underbelly. Making her apologies, the matronly Susie had vanished after the climb up, saying she was going to tend to dinner. The others who had accompanied the Americans to the station hustled about through the warren of dimly lit passages, attending to their own business. Anya and Tex simply stood at the back of the room watching Gannet do his magic. A stocky guy with a fluorescent pink mohawk, jug handle ears, and a pug's face sat beside Phil, tinkering with a piece of equipment. He was Stan the Man McLeod, the physical plant engineer. His job was to keep the place as livable as it was, which on first impression didn't say much, but seemed to be more of an accomplishment when one took into account the beating handed out by the chilly, hostile environment on a daily basis. He poured a sable ferret named Isadora from one big, stained, scarred, crack-nailed fist to the other without seeming to notice. Rod had stepped away from his console and moved over to an agitated Stan's side. He was wearing a headset and appeared to be flipping through frequencies in the hopes of finding one that wasn't overloaded with the mysterious traffic Anya and Tex had come out to investigate.
Ah, they're stealing our audiences right out from beneath our noses, aren't they?
Aye, Stan, that they are. It's a terrible thing. The pigs couldn't shut us down for decades of trying their black-hearted best. And here we are getting done down by Silicon Bleeding Valley.
Gannet, the young broadcast engineer, swiveled in his chair, turning away from his control console and towards Anya and Tex. He wore grimy cargo pants and several layers of sweaters over what was evidently a skinny young frame. The thin neck poking from the incongruously large mass of clothes made him resemble a plush toy turtle.
"We've been getting all manner of chatter on the air up here recently. Satellite phone broadcasts, other radio traffic. It's all increased a great deal in the past few months. Never paid much mind to it before this, though."
"Can you listen in on any of it?"
"Oh, no, Miss Creed. That would be unethical, wouldn't it? Luckily, a little unethical behavior never slowed me down much."
"So what have you picked up?"
"Well, all the phone traffic is encrypted, and the rest is bloody banal. Talking to ships, the odd helicopter, that sort of thing. If I had a guess, I'd say somebody else had the same idea as us and occupied another old rig like this rattletrap. I'd say they're a bit better funded than we are, though, judging by the amount of traffic they're putting out."
"Can you tell offhand which platform they're broadcasting from?"
"Nah. There's about a dozen out here. Could be any of them."
"Can you triangulate the traffic?"
"Ah, now that we can do." "Gotcha."
A map appeared on Gannett's monitor showing an angular mass of land narrowing into the northeast and breaking into a trickle of islands as if squeezed from a cake froster with a tendency to drip. A red cross showed in the water above and to the left of the last island.
"We've a latitude and longitude. Now, let's see what's there."
The map shrank and moved to the left of the screen. A text box appeared, and next to it an image of what appeared to be a mountain rising from the sea. The box showed the name of the mountain, a strange combination of letters that was obviously Gaelic.
"How the heck is that pronounced?"
"Just say it Claymore B and you'll not be far off. That's what it means. It says here it was originally abandoned in 1998 and bought again in 2002 by a newly formed oil consortium called Europetro."
"I've heard of them before. I've seen their commercials."
"I don't know about you, but something about their perky self-righteous environmentalism and social consciousness runs down my spine like a cheese grater."
"Me too."
"Aye, especially since it's all a sham. They deserve to be called pirates far more than our lot."
"What do you mean? I thought the European Union was the majority owner."
"And that makes a difference how? Most of the world's known oil reserves are owned by government companies. It's all just a matter of what you call the thieves in charge, isn't it?"
Phil Dirt came up and laid a meaty, ring-laden hand on Gannett's shoulder.
"No more work, boy. But you've got to do something about your uncontrollable cynicism about government. That's not what anarchy's all about."
The strong, salty wind blasted across the flat, grassy terrain surrounding the airfield. Tex Winston had his left hand pressed to his head, holding his Stetson in place to prevent it from blowing away.
"That's an airplane?"
"Sure is. An ultralight, to be exact. Hand-built with love and no small measure of genius."
"I see. I just have one question."
"What's that?"
"Where do you put the key to wind it up?"
The aircraft whined past them down the narrow strip. It didn't look much like an airplane. It had a big, pod-shaped cockpit enclosed in wraparound glass, a single fuselage, and a high wing. But where it parted company with real airplanes, in Anya's mind, was the propeller located at the rear of its high-mounted wing. It looked so strange that Anya would not have believed it could fly, except it just had. It certainly deserved the moniker Ultralight, and she suspected that was why, after a very short landing run, it slowed and turned to taxi back toward them at the pace of a brisk walk. Anya noted the landing strip was very short indeed, not much longer than the length of a football field. For its picturesque emptiness and quaint sense of end-of-the-earth isolation, there wasn't room on the northerly Orkney island of Papa Westry for anything else.
"How you feeling?"
"Like I'm filled with ants and an earthquake just hit the mound."
"I hear you. Hopefully thinking about everything that we got ahead of us will take your mind off worrying."
"Did I ever tell you how much I hate positive thinking?"
The little craft came whining up to them, and Anya tried hard not to think about how much it looked like a mosquito. It stopped as a young woman in coveralls and a ball cap came dashing out from the airfield shack to stick fat wooden wedges under its tricycle landing gear. A door opened beneath the wing, and a short man with short white hair, a snowy mustache, and aviator shades popped out. He strutted forward, hand extended. Tex took it in his, then embraced him briefly. Either the little English aviator was accustomed to such typically American intimacy, or he faked it well.
Tex!
Leo! Anya, I'd like you to meet my old buddy Leo.
Both men's faces were split with enthusiastic smiles, as if reunited after decades. Still, from spending just a few days in Winston's company, Anya guessed he'd display the same enthusiasm if he was meeting a stranger for the first time. He was a genuine people person.
Leo, this is Anya Creed.
A pleasure, Leo.
It's all mine, Miss Creed.
Leo extended his hand to Anya. She took it, impressed by a grip that felt as though it could crack walnuts. A sudden look of shock washed over Leo's face, and Anya spun around to see what had caused him such alarm. Her gaze fell upon Phil Dirt, Vicious Susie, Lightning Rod, and Obnoxious as they strolled up towards the airstrip.
My soul, who are these people? Did a caravan of travelers somehow make their way out to Papa Westray?
The motley bunch trotting out from behind the little cluster of low structures beside the airfield weren't gypsies, but they were certainly out of place at the neatly maintained airfield. They were toting bulging knapsacks and rolls of blue ground sheets, and despite the punk names, they were dressed more in the fashion of long leftover hippies. Anya surmised that punk had, in the end, just been a phase for them. Their rest state was perpetually the summer of love. Phil was at the front of the pack, a genial smile locked to his face. He held out his hand as he reached Leo. Leo shook it with good, if bewildered, grace.
Aha! So you're the intrepid aviator!
Indeed.
Let's go inside.
All right, then.
Leo designed and built this aircraft himself, Anya. He's a wizard that way. Total legend in the aviation world. Test flew England's first supersonic bomber in the early 60s. They even did a stint at Edwards.
My Ariel!
Anya turned in the direction Leo was staring in shock. Rod and Ob were unrolling the shiny blue tarps around his aircraft and weighing them down with head-sized chunks of rock. Kneeling, Susie was unpacking big rolls of masking tape and cans of spray paint. Phil's job seemed to be to shake the cans to make sure they rattled properly.
She'll be fine, Leo, just fine. The paint will wash right off. And if it doesn't, my show will pay for a nice new paint job. The old girl could use a fresh coat, couldn't she?
As he towed the shocked Englishman away by the arm, he winked at Anya over his shoulder. As she turned to follow alongside, she wondered exactly what the gesture indicated. Either that he was actually footing the bill himself, she guessed, or that he already had a plan in mind to get some kind of past master episode out of this escapade. He had already displayed himself to be abundantly ready to bend or even break regulations and laws in what he thought was a good cause.
I've used her on the show a few times. Ariel and I go way back.
There isn't any risk to her, is there, Tex?
I'll take as good care of her as I do my own precious hide. I'm not a stuntman after all, Leo, you know that. I don't get paid to take foolish risks. Now come on, there's a fresh brewed pot of coffee waiting for you inside. Think I might have seen him bottle a 30-year-old single malt with your name on it in there, too.